Please do sit down. We were told, were we not, that we didn't have to worry about a day of judgment, that we wouldn't have to account for everything we'd done and said and who we'd met and how we'd dealt with money. But I wasn't sure about that, so I consulted the experts in their flowing robes. They looked in their dusty books and quoted chapter and verse. And I said, "Are you sure there won't be a judgment?" They said, of course there won't be a judgment. You've nothing to worry about. But even if there is, you still have nothing to worry about. You've done your best, haven't you? The way you've lived, the way you've done things and spoken to people is as good as what anyone else has done, isn't it? And they said, even if you do have to stand before the judgment seat, you needn't worry about what will happen. And so it was with those comforting thoughts that I walked through the entrance to the High Court on the Strand. And I was not so worried about what would happen. I noticed a few interesting things about the High Court. You may not notice it in the pictures or the news reports, but there's a gate outside the High Court, which is some distance from the entrance, of, I don't know, 20 feet or so from the doorway. And the gate is always open during the day, a quite wide gate, and there's a sort of very thin line across the line where the gate would close, and all the journalists stand behind that. And as I strolled across this line oblivious, I noticed that they were right up against the line, but they would not cross it. And I learned that if they put a foot over that line, then the foot and any appending body would be dragged off down to the cells downstairs for contempt of court. So they literally towed the line, did the journalists. And another interesting thing I noticed a few days into proceedings was one of the parties asked for a delay to proceedings, and the judge thought for a minute and said, "Yes, that's okay. On your way out, just deposit £50,000 in the clerk's office." And I thought, whoa, you know, don't mess about here. And as things went on, I gradually found that all my comforting words that I'd heard from the QCs, who were not to be trusted, in my opinion, in any respect, but they cheerfully doled out advice to all concerned. And these were the ones who were supposed to be on my side, not the others, and they were worse. But I soon found out that all those things that I just told you I'd been assured would not happen. In fact, all of them happened. And yes, I was in the witness box and I was grilled not only about the patents that we were discussing. I thought it's only a patent case. It can't really get that bad. But it did, and I was questioned about who I'd met and when and how much money had changed hands and which hotel I was staying in and who else was there. And all these things were dragged out in the court. This went on for 2 days. It was unbelievable. And, of course, I saw that what I thought was pretty much okay could easily be torn to shreds by the QCs, and this happened to everybody. And I thought to myself, surely the judge will make some sense out of all this nonsense, and everybody's arguments were being contradicted, and everything that anybody said was challenged, and the lawyers did most unspeakable things. They literally once produced from up their sleeve, something I'd written years before and questioned me about it, something that I thought had no relevance, and it was amazing what went on. I thought, surely the judge will not put up with all this silliness and all these crazy arguments that are going on. But I found out in the end that the judge was going to judge one way or the other. There was no middle ground. So we had these two opposing sides, and it was clear when you'd sat through weeks of all this, as I did, that neither side really had a leg to stand on. But notwithstanding that, the judge decided 100% in favour of one lot and against the other lot. And so our side lost, and our side was expected to pay £2 million damages. And I thought this is quite shocking, it's quite alarming. I mean, I was only a witness, but it feels bad somehow to be on the losing side of a High Court judgment. If you've never had that, then you won't know how it feels, but it does feel bad. Obviously, it wasn't that disastrous for me, but I thought it's not that good for my reputation, really, in the scientific world. But anyway, our side appealed, and at appeal, the decision was completely reversed, 100% the other way. And what's more, although I'd witnessed them wheeling into court trolley loads of papers, they had porters' trolleys piled this high with papers, and there were six trolley loads of papers like that that was wheeled into the court. I was only responsible for about that much of it. I had no idea what the rest of it was. But anyway, despite all of this being wheeled into the court, the judgment finally turned upon a single word, a single two-letter word. This was what the judge decided. He said, all of the evidence is rubbish. Everybody who's come here has just wasted my time. This is pretty much what he said in his written judgment. I didn't read it all. I couldn't bear to go into it all. But I was told by one of the lawyers. He said, all of this is rubbish. And the judgment is based entirely upon the word at. If that word at had been something else like on or in, then the case would have gone the other way. So the judgment was based entirely on what I regarded was just a technicality. But it's true, isn't it, that in our age, we are told the same thing, not about the High Court, but about the Day of Judgment. We are told by many experts that there will not be one. We are told that we won't have to account for everything we've done and said and how we've dealt with money. And we won't have to account for the way we've lived and what we've believed. And that even if there is a judgment day, how can we be held responsible for the things we've done wrong, because we're just as good as anybody else, aren't we? And just as I found in that High Court sojourn that I had to make a few years ago, we read in the Bible that that advice is false. And just like the QCs were cheerfully doling out advice that was clearly designed to deceive all of us, so the people of this age are willing to dole out this advice that isn't really true. And Jesus said that we had to be careful that we were not judged, because Jesus had a thing about courts. He didn't really like them. Jesus' advice was to stay out of court as long as possible. And if there was any chance of sorting things out before you got there, to do so. And I thought, what good advice that was. And would that we had done that. Not that I took that decision, but all the same, how much better it would have been, and how much better it is for each of us if we don't reach that stage. And you can be sure that when a day of judgment comes, it is decisive. You'll all remember Cliff Richard's case in the High Court, and I felt for him as I saw what went on there, and he won that case. And this weekend, the Supreme Court is pondering about Brexit, and I think I can quite confidently say that their judgment will not be based on what's good for the country, but what they find in dusty books that they pulled off the shelf that were written 200 or 300 years ago, that is what will decide their judgment. And if we're all hoping for some miracle that will solve our problems and make life better for us, I don't think the Supreme Court is where we'll find it. But who knows? Who knows what will happen? We don't know, do we? And I think that what Jesus also told us, and Paul elaborated in the book of Romans, is that when we do come to that that final day of judgment and stand in the court, that we may find that we are on the wrong side of God's law, but then one might come to appeal for us, and maybe it might seem a bit of a technicality, but he will come along and say that, yes, everything they did was not very good, but I will pay the price. And just like in the appeal court, in the case I was involved in, everything was completely overturned, and the judgment went from total condemnation to support and reversal of the payments. Then the other side had to pay our side £1 million plus costs. And so that sudden upturning of everything just on one word seemed incredible to me, but that's what goes on. And Jesus tells us that in the court of heaven, that our judgment will be 100% reversed because of Jesus making an appeal on our behalf. And although it might not seem obvious from the way the Bible passage is structured, I think that that is why Jesus is telling us to live differently from other people, because we are people who've been taken to court, found guilty, given the worst punishment, and then let off completely. And the judgment has been reversed 100% the other way. Now we can walk out of the court free, and I can tell you, walking out of the court when it's all over is a good feeling if you have not been condemned. And that's how we should feel. We should feel that we are people whose death sentence has suddenly been lifted and taken away and been replaced by something that's much better than we can imagine. And so because we are people who've had that experience, we should be generous to other people, because judging, whether it's in court or whatever, is a difficult thing, and we don't like to be judged, do we? No one likes to be judged. It's a painful thing when judgment is pronounced against us. So we should be people who, having had that fatal judgment removed and taken away from us, and we are being given life in exchange for what the death we expected, we should be people who are willing to be generous and kind to others. But we also remember from the court experiences that it's a serious business, that just as delaying in the High Court is a stunningly expensive process, far beyond anything I could have imagined, delaying in our dealings with God can be expensive, that we should not be the people who ask the judge for delays. We should be the people who get on with listening to what he says and what we should do. So we should do that. And just like the journalists weren't allowed to put their feet over the line, whereas the rest of us just walked in and out quite cheerfully, we should be people who should try to do what Jesus has said. We should be people who don't cross the line into doing bad things. So Jesus gives us great advice on being kind and generous to people. And again, this advice might seem pretty tricky. If somebody comes and asks us for something, we should give them more than we ask. Isn't that a difficult thing to deal with? But Jesus says this is not because it's some rule that he's made, but we should be people who want to do that. As Paul said, we should be people who live not by the letter of the law, but by the Spirit of God. So yes, we're not compelled to give people things if they don't deserve them in the terms of our society. There's nothing that will make us do that, but we should be people who want to do that. And as for judging, I think I actually spoke about the parallel passage in Matthew 7 not very long ago, and I remember I brought a plank with me. In fact, I believe this is the same plank, and it's Jesus may have had in mind a much bigger plank, but this is all you can fit in a Fiesta sideways. And so Jesus said that if we start judging people, then we're like someone who, with a plank in front of their eyes, attempts to take a speck of dust out of somebody else's eye, which is obviously ridiculous, isn't it? And Jesus was very good at the reductio ad absurdum method of argument, but what he said was often meant to be taken very seriously. There's a little joke in it, but it's meant to be serious stuff. Jesus is telling us that, remember how much you've been let off, that you've been taken to court and found guilty and given the death sentence, and then suddenly it's been taken away. Can't you ease up a bit on other people? Can't you let them have whatever happiness they can find without messing it up and without judging them and without telling them that they're wrong? Remember, you're somebody who's been found guilty yourself. And it's so easy as we sit in church to think that we're the good people and the people out there are the ones who are not so good. But that's not how Jesus behaved, is it? In fact, considering that Jesus is going to be the judge at the end of time, he was pretty non-judgmental, don't you think? That given that he was the person who is going to judge all of us, it was remarkable how little condemning he did. We read so many passages in the Bible, and I'm sure you can remember a few, of times when Jesus was confronted by somebody who had broken the Jewish law, and Jesus did nothing whatsoever about it and refused to join in the condemnation that the Pharisees were trying to make him do. So as we look at these passages in the Bible, let's remember that our legal status is really condemned, but suddenly reversed on appeal. And as we walk out of the doorway of the court, let's remember that the happiness that we feel in that release is to be shared with other people. Thank you.